Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Provocative unscripted television is our main topic this Monday afternoon. We start with as provocative a subject as nothing else, the end of life. Into the Night, Portraits of Life and Death arises on many public television stations tonight, narrated by Sharon Stone. Award-winning producer, writer, director Helen Whitney joins me next. Our second half hour features a return connection with Nilufar Hedayat, the Fusion Reporter-producer of last year's miniseries, The Traffickers. Her latest undertaking is Forex is Food Exposed, running tomorrow night. Also ahead, Apple's new scripted timeline, new game shows from GSN, and our new super classic trivia question of the week, and I promise you, a super prize, too. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A happy Monday afternoon to you and all, and welcome to the program All About Television. 48 degrees at the top of the hour. Got some wonderful guests for you in the hour ahead, and we invite you, as always, to be in the conversation. It's very simple. Raise your voice and pick up the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open for business again, as usual. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, then follow the instructions, and anyone you want can be live with you. And Helen Whitney, we expect to be live with us after these news notes. Apple will kick off its lineup of original scripted series next March at the earliest, next summer at the latest. That's the projection from a New York Times feature published this morning. At least 12 series have been greenlighted by Apple so far, including a revival of Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories and a morning show satire co-starring Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. What remains to be finalized? How Apple will distribute its new content assortment. On an unscripted note, 5 Netflix series premiering in recent months are set for second seasons. They are the revival of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Remember that series when it was on Bravo? Dope, Drug Lords, Nailed It, and The Toys That Made Us. Dope's second season will begin April 20th. The others will have to wait and hear. GSN will put together 2 daily or nightly new game shows this year. One is America Says from Entertainment One. The other is Caroline and Friends, a viral video fest hosted by Carolyn Ray. Also on the network's near future, new seasons of Divided, Winsanity, and Snap Decision. Apparently, out of this picture, Emogenius, and the long-running series of Ben Glebe, Idiot Test. Some quickies. Daily Show host Trevor Noah and Comedy Central parent Viacom will collaborate on a new television and film venture known as Day Zero. The first project will be a movie adaptation of Noah's hit book, Born a Crime. Just found out that One Day at a Time has picked up a third season go on Netflix. 13 more episodes will be produced and released in early 2019. And at least 21.3 million viewers watched 60 Minutes on CBS last night, featuring the Stormy Daniels interview by Anderson Cooper. It's the most watched 60 Minutes edition in more than a decade. And that is news notes for today. Because of the way we are doing today's program, on very late notice, you're going to hear a little bit of a pause for a few seconds on certain segments. So stand by for a little bit, and hopefully when we come back, we'll have Helen Whitney from Portraits of Life and Death in tonight, coming tonight on PBS, many PBS stations. Also coming up later this half hour, our classic trivia question of the week. So stay tuned.
Hello? Hello?
Our first guest this afternoon has won many awards for her work as producer, writer, and director, including the Emmy Award, the Peabody Award, the Humanitas Prize, and the DuPont Broadcast Journalism Award. And some of her journalism work was featured on the award-winning investigative journalism series on PBS Tuesday nights, Frontline. Her latest work appears on many public television stations tonight, Into the Night, Portraits of Life and Death, narrated by Sharon Stone. Joining me right now, live, is Helen Whitney. Helen, thank you for joining us.
Hi, and thank you for including me.
It is a pleasure. We'll talk about what motivated you to do this special in a moment. But when you took this on, was their perceived notion of how you wanted to focus on such a subject as death?
Yes, I mean, that was what I wanted to do. That was the topic, and it was what my funder was interested in as well. And I know that there were a number of my friends and colleagues who were a little puzzled why I chose the subject, and I, you know, responded very clearly that I think it's on everyone's mind. It's the roar underneath everything. So I went ahead and have been really gratified by the enormous response to it. And even though people can get nervous and need a little reassurance when they watch the film, as you have, and I'm curious about your response to this, people leave enlivened, even exhilarated, and reassured. So that's a long answer to your question.
Well, one thing, Helen, after seeing this over the weekend, what you did over this weekend, is that you took the approach of not everybody thinks of death the same way, not everybody approaches death the same way, and some of those ways might be considered, depending on who you are, surprising and somewhat illuminating.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, there's a full range of perspectives in this film. There are people who are going with into the night with radiant acceptance. There are people that are pushing back and fighting and see death as the enemy. There are people who are curious, like the astrophysicist, what's next? And then, of course, there's the woman, the historian, who's had a near-death experience and approaches it, I would say, out of the hundreds of conversations I've had with people who are, you know, close to dying. She moved into the night with an almost eerie, surreal equanimity, 86 years old and ready to go. She had tasted, so she believed, that next life when she was 24 and came back, and the rest of her life was shaped by, as she would say, her fearlessness about death itself. So there was a range of perspectives, the atheist, the believer, the scientist, the artist who find solace in art or don't, or, you know, the believers who lose their faith when they're, as in this case, when two of their sons died and had to find it again as they approached their deaths. So it is a range of perspectives, which I hope will enable everyone to find a little piece of themselves in one of these portraits. There are 9 portraits, and I really do hope that, and I've heard that sometimes you'll say, well, that person is really, that's my story, but I find a little piece of the astrophysicist or the naturalist or the artist in me as well. So that's what I'm offering. I think what unites all these portraits and all these perspectives is the fact that each of them have been shocked into an awareness of death that's visceral, not theoretical, and it's changed them. That's what unites all these portraits. They move from the realm of the theoretical to the visceral, and they're never quite the same again after that. Never.
And it's apparently what you do or how you deal with the subject depends on how you respond to the shock.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And you may arrive at the shock with a narrative that you feel is intact, and then you'll discover it's not. And you really need to think again about what are those ultimate values that sustain you? And I think that was very, very much true in the story of the Black Baptist minister and his wife. And here is this minister who is preaching the afterlife and Christian faith, and the two terrible, painful deaths of his sons called all of that into question. And he had to get up into that pulpit for many years, you know, preaching, but faith shattered, and he and his wife had to find it again. So that's one experience.
The program is Into the Night, Portraits of Life and Death, and many PBS stations will be presenting it tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. And joining us live is Helen Whitney, the award-winning producer, writer, director, director of this program. She's live with us this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from New York, 48 degrees at the top of this hour. If you have a question or comment for Helen, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our lead guest on our next episode, Friday afternoon at the same hour, will be the acclaimed co-creator of Netflix's new series, On My Block, Jeremy Happ. The Jeremy Happ of On My Block, he's our lead guest on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Compared to other documentaries or other programs you've done, Helen, how easy was it to get the subjects, to first of all get the subjects, and second of them, get them to open up and reveal how they feel about death?
It's an interesting question. I expected that it would be the most difficult. It would be a time when you're drilling down into your family, into your memories, into your life, and that perhaps an outsider would not be welcome. And with very few exceptions, I found that most people really wanted to talk, to be heard, to be seen, and I was surprised, to answer your question, at the ease with which people welcomed me and their families into their life at this point. I was surprised. I mean, I was surprised that way doing the 9/11 film that was called Faith and Doubt at Ground Zero, and that film really was about how faith, how belief or unbelief was challenged in the wake of this horrific event. And I assumed then that people probably would be reluctant to talk to me, and yet once again I was surprised, very much so. People really wanted to be, you know, to talk about their loved ones who they lost, or talk about the experience they had, which brought them very close to death. I think those ultimate moments are so transformative that you do want to share them. That would be my explanation.
Mm-hmm. Another subject within a subject in your program, mm-hmm, is how people, A, try to complete life with others around them to make sure that they are complete with the way they are, the relationship. And the other, mm-hmm, is to find solace in something else. For example, in one of your, yeah, segments, you have a National Public Radio commentator by the name of Adam Frank, who after his brother died really got involved in seeing the stars in a whole different way.
I agree, and you know, it's one of the, I admire his ability to truly find solace in the stars. I mean, he says in the film, he said, "I don't understand how people are always talking about the excess terror they feel looking at the heavens. You know, I'm so small and they're so big, and it just makes the prospect of dying that much more terrifying." He doesn't understand that, and I really was fascinated. I mean, I don't share his ease in the universe. He looks up at the stars, and he doesn't feel small at all. He feels his story is a considerable one, just as the cosmic story is a considerable one. And I feel a bit of that existential terror. And he doesn't at all. And I think, you know, you put your finger on it. There are people who, that's his solace, and the curiosity that he brings to what's next, and feeling at home in the universe. I think he's probably not that dissimilar to a number of scientists. I certainly interviewed a number of astrophysicists, but I rarely found anyone who could express himself with a kind of poetry and precision that this man could, and his eloquence. But you brought up an interesting point. It isn't about people for him as much as himself finding his place in the universe, and that gives him solace.
How long did it take to put this special together? And of all the portraits that are here, which one was the most revelatory, not the toughest, but the most revelatory to you?
Interesting question. It took a long while because it's over 3 years. It was really a tragedy in the midst of it. My very close friend and collaborator and editor of this film and 20, 30 years worth of films died in the middle of production. So, and that irony was not lost upon either one of us. both of us working on a film about acknowledging mortality, and he's dying in the middle of it. I mean, needless to say, put the film a little bit on hold, hoping that he would recover, and he didn't, and so we chose another editor together. But I think the person for me who was the clearest and came closest to my heart was the novelist, Jim Crace. He's a sentimental atheist. I'm an agnostic, but he's a sentimental atheist, and he believes in the power of storytelling and that we must find narratives of solace that don't necessarily have to be true, but they have to offer solace. And you know, he was someone who was shocked into mortality because he sent his father off, and he and the whole family, you know, without any ceremony, just what his father wanted. The father said, just send me to the crematorium. Don't arrive. Don't do anything. You know, I'm an old-fashioned atheist. That's it. And he did what he was asked to do when he practically had a breakdown before and realized that it's not enough. You may be an atheist, but we need ritual. We need a story, and it's got to be a deeper one than just there's nothing out there. And so Jim really looked hard and deep into his life and what gave him pleasure and came to terms in a way that I haven't, but up with nature, and that his body will decompose and be part of this beautiful, messy, you know, world of tooth and claw as well as great beauty. But he consciously created his story. He realized that he couldn't be unthinking about it. And I think you remember from that extraordinary portrait of his that this is what gives him solace. He's funny about it. He says, I know that, you know, when the doctor comes in with a bad diagnosis, you know, everything I might say might fly out the window for a few minutes. But once again, I'm going to come back to the story that gives me solace, and it is my place in the natural world. So I found him so marvelously eloquent and smart, and while his narrative isn't mine, he inspired me to sort of find, at least be consciously looking for one. That's an answer.
Another one of your subjects is a person by the name of Max Moore. What a name, Max Moore. He's a futurist, and he's also a believer in cryogenics, which is the opportunity to extend life by freezing people. That's like the easiest way you can say that.
Right.
Did you find in your research that there are a lot of people who believe in life extension, whether it's by cryogenics or by other means?
Absolutely. And I'm going to put a plug in for part two. There's another 2 hours of this film that I hope PBS or some other station will broadcast next year. And it opens with really a range of scientists, not just outliers like Max Moore, who are pushing back in quite a decisive and unique way, but scientists who are in the mainstream, who believe not in immortality necessarily, but in us having longer and healthier lives. And many of these scientists really believe we're on the cusp of really some extraordinary discoveries. And when you look at how we've extended life in the last 80 years, we've probably doubled our lifespan, this is something that scientists are really taking a good hard look at. And my portrait of them is really enormously sympathetic and interested. I was very surprised at how many people whom I know sort of almost fiercely and angrily push back against the whole idea of trying to extend our lives and feel it's violating nature, that we're meant to die, we're meant to die. Well, I think, you know, bully for them, and that if we can have healthier lives and longer lives, think of all that wisdom we've accrued, that we can make fewer mistakes and live, you know, many lives. And I'm, you know, these scientists also feel that we will solve the problem of population along the way. And one thing, one statistic that's really quite remarkable is that as countries become you know, more affluent, there are fewer children. They're not needed to replace, take care of you, because so many children die in childbirth in poorer countries. So anyway, yes, there are a number of interesting, serious scientists who are working at this. And there are a lot of futurists who've got other ideas about living on digitally and uploading our minds. And I give them space as well in the next part of the film, which they occupy the first half.
You're hearing Helen Whitney. She's an award-winning producer, writer, director, and her latest work appears tonight on many public television stations around the country. It's Into the Night, Portraits in Life and Death, which originally appeared last year at the Austin Film Festival. Helen joins us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Happy to have you aboard this Monday afternoon to kick off your week here on Blog Talk Radio and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for Helen, got a few more minutes with her, so make it happen. Ring in at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up in our second half hour, we have a return visit from one of the top reporters and producers at Fusion, the cable network owned by Univision. She was with us last year for a very harrowing miniseries about the world of human trafficking called The Traffickers. Her name is Niloufar Haidat, and she'll be back with us to talk about a brand new series that started earlier this month on Fusion called Food Exposed. Like The Traffickers, it's very revelatory. So stand by for that, as well as our classic trivia question of the week. We have two prizes in play this week, so stick around for that as well. Helen, before we get into what motivated the series, I'm saving that for last. Spoiler alert, by the way, because this comes at the end of your special. I know a cancer surgeon who often has conversations with people who are about to complete life. And one of the things that this surgeon says a lot is that when these conversations happen, nobody regrets what they did. They regret what they didn't do. What level of regret, if any, did you find among your subjects about what they did in life,
what they accomplished
in life couldn't do?
That is such a good question, and the lived life is the most potent story of all. One of the portraits is of a small, and the second part is a small dying town in Colorado, and the druggist there speaks about what your cancer surgeon friend was talking about, the regrets that people had, not of having lived a bad life necessarily, but not having lived their life, and that how that was corrosive and really made dying so much more difficult. I believe this is what your surgeon was talking about, and I found that whole idea, that whole narrative of living your life, feeling you may have made mistakes, but the worst ones were not doing it. It was not that it was badly done, it was just unlived. So I think that was well said by this particular doctor. And it's a conversation that takes place and certainly took place in my own pre-interviews with so many of these people who wanted to talk about regret and trying to move beyond regret, which is, one has to, but ever so painful.
Now, why this all happened is because of a colleague of yours by the name of Ted Winterburn, who was diagnosed with a terminal illness. What motivated out of that situation to do this? And I'd like you to share the last thing that happens in your film, because he's involved with it. And as I said, spoiler alert, but this is, and we don't usually do spoiler alerts, but this is one I think that is very much worth doing.
I'm not sure I completely understand your question, but when Ted and I decided to do this film, he was well. He had no idea that he was dying or that he was even ill, but his prostate cancer just roared back. He'd had it 10 years before that, but we all thought he was going to, he's going to have chemo, but I would move down to Colorado where he lives and we would finish the film together. So he screened all the footage of basically, people who were dying or close to death or whose relatives died as he was dying. And, it took us a long while for he and I to talk about the fact that he was dying. The power of denial was so great in me and even in him. And finally, at the end, he just called me and said, "You have to come down now. We have to talk about this. You've got to choose a new editor, and we have to talk about the fact that I'm dying." And I did go down, and it's true, his last words, really, he wanted me to interview him and to talk about what his life had meant as he was heading towards the end, and what his powerful narrative was, which was a man who loved his work so much, editing, that he didn't feel he needed an afterlife. He talked about the deep pleasure that he'd had in our working together, and of course he had a wonderful marriage too. So it was an excruciatingly difficult interview to do. It was excruciating. It's even hard for me to talk about now.
And you will see that, by the way, at the end of the film. And I want to make sure one quote gets in, which is this: "I don't feel the need for legacy. I learned that the joy was in the doing of it." You have to see this interview. It is very, very special, and it comes right at the tail end of this very remarkable special. Helen, what's next for you, aside from putting together this second special subject?
That actually is my focus for the next year, and I'm also thinking about, I had so many riveting, actually extraordinarily interesting conversations filled with such wisdom that I have thought about a series of these, you know, last conversations. Dennis Potter, BBC interview is still, you can still buy it on Netflix and Amazon, which the BBC did 25 years ago. And sometimes people at the end of their lives have so much to tell us, and it's say with a kind of urgency, and again with that poetry and precision, that I feel it's a tremendous waste not to hear their words. So I'm going to be circling around this subject for a while, either through, you know, getting this part two out, or perhaps, you know, creating a series that continues the work I've been doing.
The program is Into the Night, Portraits of Life and Death. And many public television stations around the country will present it tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Don't forget to check your locals, not only for the public TV station in your area, but also where it plays. Remember, some public television stations will run this special later in the week or on the weekend, and others will also not only give you the event tonight, but also replay it at some point later on in the week. For more details about the program online, there's two places to go: PBS.org, that's PBS.org, and also a special site just for this special. It's called IntoTheNightDoc.com. IntoTheNightDoc.com. And we should point out that funding for this special was made possible by a grant from the Thiel Foundation. Helen Whitney, the producer, writer, director of Into the Night, thank you so much for joining us this half hour. All the very best for this special and your future efforts. And by the way, I also want to remind everybody, if you haven't seen Frontline, do check it out. It's the best investigative journalism program on television. Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, over many PBS stations, and of course, also online as well. Helen, thank you again. All the very best to you and your career. And again, good luck with tonight's special. I hope a lot of people see it.
And thank you. Those were really interesting questions, searching questions. Thank you.
You're very, very welcome. My pleasure. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Helen Whitney, live with us this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We'll have more on our program in a moment. First, some words from the fine folks at Audible.com and Amazon Company. Whether you have seen or not seen the Oscar-winning film of this year, Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water, you can now hear it. And the best way to hear it is through Audible.com, and especially getting a 30-day or one-month trial offer of the service with that as your free book. What you got to do for that is go to Audible.com or audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Remember, they have over 180,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio or iHeartRadio. All you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Get one free audiobook like The Shape of Water, which, by the way, is narrated by Jenna Lamont. And all you have to do is order that or any book of your choice, and you get that one-month trial offer and great customer service from the fine folks at Amazon.com, which is the parent of Audible. So hear for yourself why Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Because at audible.com, listening is the new reading. audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. And you're hearing Tomorrow Be Televised. We are the program All About the Tube. We're coming your way Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, over Blog Talk Radio and on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And remember, you can also check us out on podcast. Over 17,000 replays so far this month, thanks to you. It's a brand new record for us, and we really appreciate it. So check us out anytime you like at blogtalkradio.com/televised, iTunes, the Apple TV iTunes podcast app, and at www.iheartradio.com. Remember, when you go to iheartradio.com, go to the search bar, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the bar, click, and you're right there. Or go to Categories at the top of the screen, click that, then click Entertainment, and you will find us shortly thereafter. So remember, podcast or live, we appreciate your listening because what you say matters. When we come back, our classic trivia question of the week, and then we're going live to London where we're going to hear the person behind the traffickers from Fusion, reporter, producer Nilufar Haidiat. We'll get to all of that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the Kia D Unplugged show. Check out Kia D and her crew every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best BTR available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. We're going to hold for a couple more seconds, try to get Nip on the air, and I'll be back shortly. Tomorrow Be Televised, coming away live from New York. Simon Applebaum here with you from the Big Apple, 48 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have questions or comments for our next guest, give us that call, 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. Or get into our chat room, as Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, has just done, and that is SimonApple04 by name. You will find our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Last year, one of Fusion's top reporter and producers put together a stunning documentary series called The Traffickers. We had her on this program a year ago when that documentary was running, and now she is back with a brand new miniseries that premiered earlier this month on Tuesday nights, and it's called Food Exposed. Joining us live from London, an internet radio exclusive, Fusion reporter and producer Nilufar Haidiat. Nil, great to have you back.
Thank you so much, Simon. What an introduction indeed.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, you deserve it, because The Traffickers was a marvelous piece of work that you did, and it was harrowing, surprising, and hopefully it brought about some action, if not here in the United States, elsewhere around the world where you were reporting on the situations.
It actually did. I was in the last year since I last spoke to you, the show has managed to get around the block, as it were, and it's aired in over 32 territories that I'm aware of. It's been presented in evidence in the Italian Senate. I got invited by the Pontifical Academy of Science to visit the Vatican as they basically set out their agenda in order to try and end organ trafficking, which was then used in the ratification of a new law within the European Union that takes organ trafficking incredibly seriously and looks at the doctors and the sort of white-collar workers that are behind it. And more importantly, I think I've been getting feedback from important key policymakers, NGOs, and those people that kind of specialize in the trafficking arenas in the world, who try to battle against it. And they have been reaching out to say that The Traffickers was illuminating. So, you know, as it's gone on Netflix, which it's on right now, available on Netflix right now, the feedback has just been overwhelming. I have to say, as a producer, as a host, as a content maker, you spend a lot of time kind of making these series and then just putting them out in the air, as it were. And then when you get that kind of feedback, it makes all of the painstaking hard work worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you're on the trail of dealing with issues of food. A lot of people all over the place throughout television history have had specials or series or miniseries dealing with that topic. How did you decide, and when did you decide, I'm going to do my thing about this subject?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Everyone's sort of stuck an oar into that lake. But I really wanted to make Food Exposed because I, what was happening was I was making the traffickers, and then I was going home at the end of the day, logging on and spending about an hour or two watching documentaries, reading research papers, and trying to really understand where my food was coming from. How was it being produced? By the time it ends up to me in a beautiful, you know, cellophane plastic wrapped box in my local supermarket, I mean, I was so detached from what that world was. And as I started to dig into research, I was curious, and I learned some incredibly interesting things. And I thought, well, maybe it's time that I looked at this from the type of immersive documentary filmmaking that I do. And that's Food Exposed was sort of born. Again, we teamed up with the Oscar-winning, Emmy-winning, everything-winning Lightbox, Simon and Jonathan Chin, to make them, and Fusion commissioned it, which was, I think, quite a brave commission in a space that's already quite, you know, there's a lot of noise going on in the whole idea of kind of food and diet and where our food comes from. So I'm hoping that this is very much different to what's out there currently, and it's sort of my take, Nelifa's take on the whole business.
What's the message that your series is preventing or presenting?
Well, the message that we are preventing, I'll take that one on first, is that don't believe everything that you are told, that there are entire industries, office blocks, people, PR folk, marketers, engineers, advertisers sat there with a specific aim to misinform at the worst, but to maybe divert our gaze, our attention on one of the most sort of elaborate, most corruptible and most, you know, multi-billion dollar industry, the food business. I think we were trying to present perhaps a very different narrative. And what the Food Exposed does try to do is to kind of bring those narratives to the fore. As you know, Simon, my journalism, the way that I like to do things is to kind of really go there. And I'm not just saying that because it's a tagline that I heard on CNN. I mean, I literally go there, whether it's a 17 back-breaking hour drive through Liberia to get to the communities that are affected by the palm oil industry, or, you know, we went to the Arctic to go to the global seed vault. We went out to the high seas of the Gulf of Guinea. There was a lot of resources, clout, determination to kind of find the facts that are so often elusive when it comes to the ethics, the production, the industrial food complex, and the mechanisms by which it operates. So I think we were trying to offer a different perspective on an often well-trodden ground. And I don't know, it's for everyone else to decide, but I'm incredibly proud of what we've achieved.
You're hearing Fusion reporter-producer Nelifar Hediyat. Her latest work is called Food Exposed on Tuesday nights, including tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Fusion, the cable network owned by Univision. She's with us live from London this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Happy you're aboard with us on this Monday afternoon, wherever you're listening to us across the country and around the globe on Blog Talk Radio and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Simon Outbound with you live from New York, 48 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our guest, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Netflix has a new acclaimed dramedy on its hands, filmed in South Central Los Angeles, called On My Block. And this Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we've got one of the co-creators with you, Jeremy Haff. Jeremy Haff from On My Block, lead guest, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. In investigating the whole food scene, Nell, did you come away with the conclusion that no matter what food we eat, whether it is anything from pizza to soy burgers to anything organic or natural, there's something wrong with either A, the food, B, the packaging of it, or C, the ethics of getting it out into the marketplace?
I think whenever we try to bring food over from the Philippines, from Germany, from North Africa to the United States, I think we know that there is an entire process that's taking place. And what I learned on the traffickers and what we certainly expose and try to interrogate in Food Exposed is that the food business is no different. It just has to happen in a shorter space of time. So, I mean, the premiere episode tomorrow night on Fusion TV and available online is all about the waste situation. The fact that we are so, I mean, food is designed to be as aesthetically pleasing as it is nourishing or tasty. And that has taken on, I mean, we are living in an age where that idea of food needing to be sexy is on speed. I mean, it is amazing to see how much food we waste. 40% of all the food that the Americans buy never gets eaten. So it never makes it into us. So we try to interrogate why that is. So I think it doesn't matter. I mean, people say to me, well, are you advocating sort of a raw vegan, paleo, you know, alternative organic lifestyle? And I say, no, absolutely not. I don't do half that stuff myself. So I can't expect anyone else to. But what I do as a result of the series is I Google it. Nowadays, we have such information at our fingertips that I think the age where you can sort of presume ignorance or just be sort of, they say ignorance is bliss, and living in that reality just isn't possible anymore. And the most important thing, I think, Simon, is that people are curious. You know, people are wanting to find out more, whether it's Cowspiracy or Earthlings or What the Health or a lot of the sort of social media influencers that I met along the way who are carving, you know, this idea of clean eating, a label I hate, by the way. But, you know, we are living in a world where food is such an integral part, not just of how we nourish our bodies, but how we live our lives, what class we associate with, what tribe we feel like we belong to. So I think that it would be easy to say that, you know, if you live this uber clean eating, you know, lifestyle, that you somehow are exempt from this problem. You're not. We are all living in the reality. And I think one thing that I take heart from is I met so many people around the globe, 16 countries. We went around the globe several times over. And I'm just heartened by the response I got, by the people I met in the first world, in the developing, people who were incredibly wealthy from the food business, and people who were barely making $10 a week. That everyone is trying to do their bit, that human beings tend to do good rather than bad if they can. I think it's when we have faceless corporations like your Monsanto's, your Smithfield's, your WH groups, then sort of that connection that people have to food gets lost. It's marred with finding the quickest way to make the cheapest food and force it down our throats. And I think the more we get back to that original connection that human beings have to food, the better it is for us.
In the course of your journey putting this series together now, did you find companies or did you find organizations or social campaigns that were doing the right thing or the just thing to put out food in a way that we wouldn't have to worry about how clean it is or how damaging it is or how the dangerous chemical inside we don't know about that could, you know, harm us?
Yeah, I mean, it would be easier for me to list off a list of the kind of corporations and companies that I'm really worried about how they're presenting information to us. But in terms of those that are trying to change the narrative, trying to present a counter-narrative, Feed the 5,000, who I met out in L.A., who tried to rescue food that is perfectly edible, and tried to feed 5,000 people at one of their events. L.A. Kitchen, again, who is run by a man who has a philosophy which he has cultivated over 20 years, where he says, waste not food, waste not people. I mean, that is where we're going with it. That's a beautiful mantra that I absolutely wholeheartedly buy into. All the way through to the organizations and companies that are far more smaller, local, all the way out throughout Africa, who are trying to give farmers who are much more small scale, the Davids, who are facing these multinational interests, the Goliaths, phones that have apps like the NIMBY app, Not In My Backyard app, which empowers farmers to report cases where the industry, a farmer, a corporation, is impinging on our right to eat healthy and good food and know where it comes from. I saw lots of things to be really passionate and really positive about. I have to say, though, we don't shy away from taking on those Goliaths. Mm-hmm. I personally have never. Simon and Jonathan Chin at Lightbox and Suzanne Lavery, who was my showrunner, did not shy away from taking on, you know, Monsanto, arguably one of the biggest corporations in the world. We didn't shy away from taking on the WH Group out in Malaysia, arguably one of the biggest corporations in the world. And I think that's really important. I think that's why I have faith in my journalism. I can sort of stand by my team, my researchers, my producers, who we worked really, really hard to try and present this in a way that can at least be thought to be non-biased. It's such a tricky game, though, Simon. It's really hard, especially with food, and especially in America, where things like ag gag laws, these are agricultural gagging laws, prevent people from speaking out with heavy, heavy fines, if not federal prison sentences. So some of the activists I met at, like, for example, Wayne at Direct Action for Change, a lawyer by trade, risking his life, risking his freedom to expose what's going on in the pork industry. You know, these people need to be shouted out because they do far more than just kind of make a pretty documentary, which is important to me, of course. We're trying to present a different narrative that's out there that very often is just drowned out by the cacophony of noise.
You know, it's interesting you raise that because over this weekend, TNT, which runs episodes of Law and Order in marathon format on weekend mornings, had an episode, which I caught the last like 10 minutes of, which deals with a company executive, I believe from a fast food chain, whose burgers have been eaten by four or five children who died because of a chemical that was in the burger. That they supposedly had no control over how the burger was processed. And Sam Waterston, as the jury is trying to deliberate what verdict is, Sam Waterston, who plays the prosecuting attorney, brings the executive, his battery of lawyers, into the room, into his place, and is, like, trying to get him to take a plea for, like, 10 years in jail. And he's still going, nope, they're not going to do it, not going to do it. Why should I go to jail? This is like a happenstance thing. You know, most of the time people have like our burgers and so forth. And then Waterston brings in, aha, one of the mothers of the kids who died from one of those burgers and who does this very impassioned plea of, you know, you should have, you know, et cetera, you should have watched over that burger kind of thing. And then, of course, the executive capitulates. Now, that, of course, is a script. But is there, you know, in putting this together, is there a way for people to hold a company that clearly is doing wrong in their manufacture or process of food, any way to hold them to account, or is it basically a drama that you can't deal with?
I would say the former. Let me tell you a really, really quick story. This might seem like a bit of a segue, but it's really important. In the United Kingdom, in Europe, as it were, a few years ago, we had this thing called the horse meat scandal. And what had happened was in some of the meat in our hamburgers, there were found to be microscopic traces of horse meat. Now, that is anathema to the British public. The idea that you're eating an honest hamburger and you could be eating horses, people were just riled up. The media, the papers, the news kind of complex got a hold of this, and entire industries, supermarkets, brand names were shouted out. This led to IKEA taking down and absolutely stripping its stores of all of their meatballs. This led to other supermarkets like Asda and Sainsbury's here in the United Kingdom to empty their shelves of all and any suspected meat products. This led to an entire investigation into where the meat was coming from. And what was really interesting amongst all of this is the completely legal way that these meats were being cross-contaminated. So what I'm trying to say with that kind of weird story is that when we want change and we are riled up and we are angry, things change almost instantaneously. And we can move heaven and earth when our attention, when our eye zeroes in on a certain issue. In America, like I said, it's a little bit more different because corporations are that much more powerful, but it's not impossible. A year ago, a class action suit was filed against Monsanto because of their use of a certain specific pesticide to grow their soya beans that was allegedly making people very sick. And that's in the United States, where agricultural gagging laws are so profoundly powerful. I have every faith that whether it's allowing GMOs to come out in Uganda, whether it's the European Union deciding whether they should ban the use of palm oil or not, these debates, these discussions are being had. And I think we absolutely can raise our voices and they can absolutely action change. But again, it goes back to that original point that very hard for us to get that information. Even me personally, before I did the series, before I had a raft of researchers and producers helping me, before I went onto the ground to do the field work, I didn't know. It's so hard with the amount of noise and research and counter-research and opera research that's out there.
So now, deliberate pun, where is your appetite going for your next project? Do you want to do another series of Food Exposed? Do you want to another subject? Where are things at with your work with Fusion?
That was a very good pun, by the way. I am taking a little time off. I worked flat out last year without so much as a week holidays. So, and as you can tell by my voice, I'm fairly tired. I've spent quite a long time kind of promoting the series, and it's just airing tomorrow night, the premiere episode tomorrow night. So I'm going to take some time off. I'm going to read Time magazine. I'm going to read the broadsheets and just get inspired again. I really miss that bit of our job as journalists where we find that little spark that lights a fuse to an epic sort of Homeric odyssey, and that's what I'm looking for now. I'm finding my next big challenge. So tweet me, Instagram me, you know, let me know if there's anything you think I should be looking at. But I'm going to just definitely take some time to muse and get inspired.
Our new show from Fusion with our guests is tomorrow night. It's called Food Exposed. It already started early this month on the network, and you can catch it tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Pacific time. It's 8 p.m. Pacific time on Fusion, the cable network owned by Univision. Check your local news for where Fusion is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the program online, here's where you go, Fusion, FUSION.TV. That's Fusion.TV. The name of the program again, Food Exposed, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Nayef Farhadiyat, thank you again for joining us. Pleasure to have you back on the program. All the very best to you with this new series, and take some great time off and come on back roaring with another great series. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Nayef, Simon.
You got it. Take care. Enjoy.
Bye.
Nayef Farhadiyat joining us live from London here this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Now it's time for our classic trivia question segment. First of all, let's give you the answer to the question we've been posing the last 2 weeks. And nobody got, unfortunately, so nobody wins Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television, the book by the best-selling author was on our program a couple weeks back. The question was this. What was TV's first maid, Marion? That's Robin Hood's girlfriend. Who was TV's first maid, Marion? The answer? Bernadette O'Farrell. She was the first maid, Marion, when The Adventures of Robin Hood premiered on CBS and around the world in 1955. The show ran four seasons until 1959, and midway through, Bernadette was replaced by Patricia Driscoll. And of course, Richard Green played the popular daring do of Robin Hood for all four seasons. So Bernadette O'Farrell was our answer to our classic trivia question last 2 weeks. Now let's give you a new question, and we have two prizes for you this time around. First up, Stealing the Show by Joy Press, and now we're adding for the very first time something graphic. It's a wonderful book called The Merry Worlds of Krypton. It is tied in with the new Krypton TV series that premiered last week on Sci-Fi. Cameron Welsh, the showrunner of the program, was on our program last week. It's great comic art from the likes of Howard Chaykin, great comic writing from John Byrne, all deals with Superman's home planet. And here is our question. What game show host narrated the first episode of The Adventures of Superman, starring George Reeves? Once again, what game show host narrated the first Adventures of Superman episode back in the 1950s, starring the late George Reeves? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, enclose your name and your full mailing address. And if you are first with the correct answer, we will win The Many Worlds of Krypton from the folks at DC Comics and Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television by Joy Press. Once again, simonapple04@yahoo.com. If you just missed the question a moment ago, don't worry. I will post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and at my Twitter handle at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So all the very best. One more time, simonapple04 at yahoo.com. And that's the same email to use when you want to comment on what you hear on this program, to give us your thoughts about where the TV world is at and where it's going, and also be involved in a feature called A Show to Know that we do regularly here on this program. Show to Know goes like this. Is there a TV show you like that doesn't get enough attention? It's not well promoted or publicized, whatever, but you like it and you think others will too? Well, email me at the address I just gave you, and if we use your suggestion on the air, you will get the credit. Once again, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Once again, I want to thank Nell. I want to thank Helen Whitney, our guest in the earlier half hour, for joining us. Once again, I want to remind you that Helen Whitney's program is Into the Night, Portraits of Life and Death, premiering tonight at 9 p.m. Pacific time over many public television stations. So if you want to find out more about the program online, go to pbs.org or to the special website, intothenightdoc.com. That's intothenightdoc.com. And coming up Friday on Imami Televised, my lead guest will be one of the co-creators of Netflix's newest acclaimed series, a dramedy set in South Central Los Angeles, On My Block. Jeremy Haff will be our lead guest. It's Jeremy Haff right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right off the bat, this Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up an episode you missed, we make it so easy for you, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. You will find today's episode there in about an hour or so, usually less. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget to check out the podcast version. You'll find it on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at iHeartRadio.com, at iTunes, and also on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or online. And check out my Tomorrow Be Televised and Upfront News and Views columns in the pages of Media Village, the popular web analysis and commentary site covering television and other media, hosted by Jack Myers. I got a column that came out today about the Crown Media upfront. That didn't happen, but it became a snow front. You'll read all about it at MediaVillage.com. It's MediaVillage.com. Remember, we love hearing from you, so use that email, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, we love hearing from you, no matter how you do it, social media, email, otherwise. We appreciate it because what you say matters. The views presented on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio or iHeartRadio. Our production associate at BTR is Candace Williams. AnyToast Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of this enterprise are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, an Amazon company and proud development partner of the New York Television Festival, coming back to the Big Apple this July. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For that free audiobook and 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. But Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday and your week. We're back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio. Whatever you're up to this week ahead, please make it safe and great. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.